I wondered how to draw this last little picture, actually, how to represent it. Because as Rev Master points out in speaking about it, it is really the unity of all the other pictures. I shouldn't put it in those exact words, but I'll read you her words in a minute. In the spiritual life, you're constantly running through all positions, passing through all positions, returning to the same starting point. And the starting point is the finish point, too. And this column expresses that. One begins with an intuitive knowledge of the eternal, what I've so often called the knowing without knowing. Something in you is on it, even if you seem not to get it at all. And we have that all our life. The work of spiritual training, the purpose of the contemplative life, is to bring all of the aspects of our existence into harmony with that truth, so that our daily life exemplifies naturally, not in a calculated way, but naturally exemplifies harmony with the eternal. The difficulty of trying to describe what it is to truly be out of the driver's seat is that mostly what we tend to know is trying to be in the driver's seat. This last column expresses the truth that there simply are no opposites. The eternal is. All of existence comes and goes within this reality. As reflections come and go in a mirror. We tend to start from the position of the duality of either I'm in control or someone else or something else is in control. If I'm in control, that's scary because I'm really responsible for what I do, but at least I'm in control. If I'm not in control, that's scary because God knows what might happen to me if I'm not really in control. The problem, again, of speaking of this fifth column is that these opposites are not that I've just described are not the reality. And there is no me versus the eternal to be the control issue. This puzzled me seriously, gravely puzzled me for years. And if I put it in words, it seems a rather abstract thing, but the implications of what I'm saying are not abstract. They can be very, very personal and very frightening. I've often told the story of how Rumi Master helped me with this. After several years of inner perplexity, really, and a kind of deep fear, and she just pointed out that the leaf goes where the wind blows and does not disobey the wind. It does that because its true nature is the wind. Therefore, there cannot be an opposition between my will and the will of the Eternal, or my good and the good of the Eternal. This is not something that's real. When the wind blows, the leaf flies. It's that simple, really. And our choice is whether we'll give ourselves to the wind or not. But having given ourselves to the wind, we don't need to worry then. That wind will only blow for good, for self and others. That does not mean there isn't sometimes a personal price to pay. And one has to be willing to trust that that price can be paid and it will be worth it each time that it's paid, as is in fact the case. This is why what came up for me with regard to this, and again without thinking of the columns at all, without thinking of anything at all, just came out of me, it was 98-99, the last of those five aspects, or the fifth of those five aspects of meditation. Follow gladly. And a gladness is not a state of feeling, it's a state of will, or willingness. The choosing to say, yes, I am willing. And entrusting all that one is into the hands of the Eternal. The other thing that's difficult to explain about this is that we only know when we're not enlightened. We don't know when we are. And this fifth column is a place of complete enlightenment. So how can you know when you're in that place? So you have to not worry about it. It's a matter not of knowing, but of entrusting. Entrusting oneself into the hands of the Eternal. It's a matter not of knowing, but a matter of following that same inner light that led one to training in the first place and following it through the twistings and turnings of everyday life. And when we miss it, well, we find out we missed it. And when we hit it, we don't need to worry about it because it got hit. When you hit the mark, you don't need be told you hit the mark. You need to know when you don't hit it. Sometimes in looking back, you can see, well, the mark got hit there. I don't know how that happened. It doesn't matter. This following is, I mean, this is why it's following. If I was the one leading, then I'd presumably know what I was doing. But if I'm the one following, I actually don't know what I'm doing. One Zen master described it as groping for one's pillow in one's sleep. It's instinct. Rumi Master so often talked about and wrote about the fact that our intuition is not taken into account in our education. And so often isn't respected or is even despised, as she sometimes put it. And kind of pride of intellect and pride of worldly achievement. It's why this training in this fifth column is the greatest humility. Here I am, do with me as you will. Today you lead, I follow. This is why we have discipleship. This is why discipleship is the very heart of our training. And why the fulcrum upon which all is levered and turned and rotated in our training is the master-disciple relationship. I'm speaking for monks here. To some degree, this applies to lay trainees depending on how far they go. But certainly for monks, you become a monk, you become a disciple. Herb Massey used to say, the master represents the eternal. The master is not the eternal. The master represents the eternal. If you just see another human being in your master, you're missing the point. You know your master is another human being. Your master represents something for you. Her master is no less my master, having been dead over 10 years, than she was when she transmitted me. And no less real for me. And in some respects, even more real for me now. Certainly more precious with every passing year. The purpose of the human master-disciple relationship is to help us be true disciples of the eternal. We have to start with something that we can recognize with our senses because we're so locked into our senses. And that's not where it's intended to stay forever. And we're not putting our master on a pedestal and worshiping. That's pointless. This is not guru worship. We're training in discipleship. That's what this is. And when the training is complete, discipleship is complete. Always there is a Buddha senior to oneself. The way it's expressed in the last rule of the Tai Tai Koho. Rules for novices. So many times in my relationship with River Master, and I had the good fortune to be very close to River Master, I would recognize that I was consciously choosing a kind of surrender in that relationship. I found at a certain point that when I entered her room, before I ever entered that room, I'd make a conscious choice. When I go in this room, I leave me behind. I leave my insistence behind. I couldn't have put it in words, but it was something I was choosing. When I go in this room to be with this person, what I wish, what I think should be, my own opinions, my own wishes, my own emotions, they're not the important thing. Again, it wasn't something that was put in words, it was just the way it was. When I did a job for her, it was the way she wished it done, not the convenience or inconvenience to me. Sometimes I'd do something for her and she'd want it to be in a very particular way. It was her way that mattered, not mine. At one time I was doing a job for her that she really wanted done like that day, which was not that uncommon. It was going to get done that day. And I went to her and I said, you know, well, I can do it and just kind of ram this in using these particular materials, or I could do a much nicer job. Room masters, I don't care, just get it done. So I did, you know, it was really a rather sloppy job, and probably it got done differently at a later date. I don't know. But that's what she wanted it done then, and I only had a certain amount of time. It was only so many hours in a day. It had to get done. And it may not have reflected much on me as a craftsman, not that I'm any kind of craftsman in wood anyway. But it got the job done. And this is discipleship. Getting yourself out of the way. And this, you get trained in this. When you're training with the seniors in the temple, it's the same. That senior who's in charge, that person who's senior to you is in charge, they're in charge. You get the self out of the way. You can't do this if you can't succeed at this unless you can do this and not be miserable about it. And the point of it is that when you're flying more on your own, that discipleship's got to be transferred over to the eternal or you're lost. You are lost. I remember in the early days at the Abbey, River Master would say, sometimes he'd say, everything that's done here in this monastery, Koho Zenji is doing, if I'm the one who's doing it, we're in trouble. After 76, there wasn't a reference to Koho Zenji in that way anymore. It was the eternal then. It was the same thing, and it was evident. It was evident for those who had the faith and the stillness in their hearts to see it. It was evident that someone who was living the life of Buddha fully. And that the course of our daily life was being guided by something other than just the whim of an individual or the good intentions of an individual. It's not that it didn't have the mark of her personality. Of course it did. It's not that there wasn't the mark of her humanity, of her taste, all of that is present. And that wasn't the important thing. The deep direction was coming through her from the eternal. And this is the purpose of our spiritual life. That we can be a pipe for the compassion and wisdom of the eternal. If I'm the originator of compassion and wisdom, man, I'm sunk, and anyone who's depending on me is sunk. Because it's just going to be some paper, gossamer, illusory replica of the real thing. If it's a real thing, it may not be so pretty sometimes, but it's going to accomplish what needs accomplishing in the situation. And especially, and this is really the important thing, in the long run, it's going to be for the best. In the long run, it's going to be for the best. In the five ranks, this position is called unity attained. And the very word attainment there is, you know, really very misleading. Because how do you attain a following? Well, I should put that a different way. I mean, how do you attain the act of following? The activity of following. I guess you can attain a following by becoming a movie star, but that's not what I meant. You can't attain it. It has to happen on the moment-to-moment basis, moment-to-moment choice, really. It has to be something that's lived from moment to moment. And there's no cumulative attainment there. There's no static state that's reached. This is like the big enlightenment and the great big neon sign, you know, you can put over your little house where you live. It's not the way it is. Sometimes I raise the eyebrows of old Shakyamuni, and sometimes I do not. Sometimes it is good to do so, and sometimes it is not, says Kazan. That's the one that will really get you. Sometimes it's good to do so, and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it is necessary to appear in the form of a serene monk. Sometimes it is necessary to, and better, and it is following to appear in the form of a messy fool. You can't go by external form. The closest you can go by it is the precepts, and even then, sometimes you need to break one precept to keep another. And the eternal will never break the true spirit of the precepts. Her master, I'll read a few of her words on this column. The fifth column binds all together, heaven, earth, body, mind, darkness, light, all the opposites. She again quotes the Sando Kai, within all light is darkness, but explained it cannot be by darkness that one-sided is alone. In darkness there is light, but here again by light one-sided is not explained. The Sando Kai is a detailed explanation of the fifth column. That's because the Sando Kai literally means harmonization of the principle with the phenomenal. Harmonization of the eternal, and harmonization of the principle is the eternal, the phenomenal is us and our karmic mess. So it means harmonization of us with the eternal. It's the literal meaning of Sando Kai. The fifth column is the stem of the body. The stem of the lotus, the physical body, the means by which man may know the Lord. It's a physical body in the sense that the physical body is entirely of the eternal, you see. And is the platform, as it were, upon which training happens. The physical body is a manifestation of the karma that is finding it, seeking its resolution within the eternal. Your body is deeply significant, says Dogen Zenji. It is by means of it that I may know the Lord. My body suffers when I do not know the way to the cessation of suffering. It is a use of the body and mind which is the way to the cessation of suffering. The rightful use of body and mind. Meditation, training, the right use of body and mind. What exquisite things are this body and mind? The root of the universe is exemplified therein. Root, R-O-O-T, not R-O-U-T-E. The root of the universe. In other words, again, this is a place where there is complete oneness. Looking back upon the stream of karma with enlightened eyes, one sees not a single speck of dust. And this is literally true. Looking back upon all the grief and misery, all the horror and fear, all the agony and confusion, as well as all the merit and all the right choices. Looking back upon the whole thing with enlightened eyes, it's seen not a single speck of dust. There is nothing from the first. A And his Reverend Master so often said, it is the greatest nothingness beyond anything you could ever imagine. The immaculacy of nothingness. The immaculacy of no thing separate from the eternalness. No thingness. No thing separate from the eternalness. Nothingness. Not vacuity, but sparkling immaculacy that is experienced whenever the water, the Spirit is experienced in our own body and mind. We have a taste of that immaculacy, a glimpse into it. From the very beginning of training, we're working on getting out of the driver's seat. Her master used to say, the first step, the first true act in religion is for us to get out of God's seat. And here is simply described getting completely out of God's seat. And it's something that has to be done this moment, now there's another moment, now it needs to be done again. Now it needs to be done again. No one gets it right all the time. The wobbles are built into this process. And the more you train yourself, the more you will get it right. Now, this last thing I want to talk about with regard to this is something more from my own experience than from anything specific that Reverend Master taught me with words. But I'd say it was taught more, and it's the only way it can be taught from another human being at all, is just through example. There's one thing that we always knew with Reverend Master, that whatever any of us did, Reverend Master would be there, sitting there. Reverend Master would be there. That whatever permutations we went through, whatever confusion and wanderings we went through, Reverend Master would be there. And that is the living expression of the Bodhisattva vows, what the Bodhisattva vows really are about. The Bodhisattva vows are about an unconditional willingness. It has no condition of time, no condition of space upon it. It was the no condition of time thing is the one that concerned me for a while. You know, the implications of that for someone who inherited enough karma to be not too keen on anymore, picking up any more in the future. The no limitation of time thing was a concern of mine for a while, until again Reverend Master helped me with it. No conditions mean no conditions. The unconditional willingness, wherever you lead, I will follow, whatever the situation. If you are leading, I will follow. Whatever the life, whatever the realm of existence, whether it be heaven or hell or anything in between, I will follow. That's why when I take that last of the Bodhisattva vows, I take Bodhisattva vows privately twice a month, formally. And when I take that last of the vows, I now take it as the way is eternal, I vow to follow it forever, which first came up to do that, I mean, that was a bit scary for me. But it isn't if one understands it in terms of a non-driver CD resolve. It's just trying to express, and it's hard to express it in words without there being some one-sided point of view and easily interpreted. But the unconditional willingness, wherever you lead, I will go. And then, because that there is that in it that is scary, then that throws you back to the very first of the five columns, you see. Looking up through that darkness, that little beam of light coming through it, saying, boy, there's wherever I look, there's the potential of a big cloud of darkness, so please help. You see, rather than being a resolve of pride, it's a resolve that throws you back on the deepest humility. Because it reminds you of your own need. In myself, I can do nothing. With you leading, well, I can at least follow, you see? I think I'll just leave it there for now.